So today, I am lucky enough to be chatting with singer, songwriter, and actor Scott Foland. So, hey Scott, it's great to be chatting with you today.
Hi Paula, yeah, and you. Lovely to be here.
Fantastic. So let's start off. So you began acting at the age of 12. Were you always interested in the stage and the arts?
Well, it's a strangely, acting wasn't the thing I thought I would do with my life,
Right.
or it wasn't expected of me anyway, because my dad was a touring musician in Ireland, and he was a big rock singer. And then moved to London, met my mum, and settled down into musical theatre.
Wow.
He always and I always thought, as a child, you always want to be your dad when you're older. So I
Yeah.
always thought I was going to be a songwriter or a touring musician. And then at nine, my mum, to get me out of the house, sent me to acting lessons, and I fell in love with it. And from then on, they got me into acting. They sent me for my first audition,
Yeah.
which was for the film Nativity 2,
Yes.
and I ended up getting it. So that was my first ever job. It was a feature film. I was a featured role. I had a name, Scott, which was original. Yeah, it was a good start. And then the singer songwriting came back in when I was 15 or 16 and had my first heartbreak. So I wrote my first breakup song. I took it to my dad, and he said, "Okay, would you like me to give you feedback as your dad or as a songwriter?" And I, like, obviously, I got back a bit cocky, and I went, "Oh, well, as a songwriter." And he goes, "Okay, those middle eight bars, they're good. Oh, okay. What about the rest of the song?" I'd just get rid of it. What? And yeah, so he made me get rid of the entirety of the rest of the song. And rewrite from the middle eight bars. And obviously, I was 15, so I had a big old tantrum. Came back and then went a couple of weeks later and went, right, show me how to do this. And he
Yeah.
taught me my first song. And since then, I've written, and I'll do the check because I write them down in my notes and it gives you a number. I have written 103 songs since then. Yeah.
That's
So thank you to my
crazy.
dad teaching me to write a song. And yeah, I'm 22 now. So that was seven in 7 years, I've written about 105 songs, really.
Yeah, I'm still a baby. Still a
Yeah,
baby in the grand scheme of things.
fine.
So, I mean, would you say you have a style? How would you describe it?
In my music, yeah, I would say, I always say, I like a live gig, and my live gigs are very specific and they're very kind of intimate, and I share stories of my life. Some songs are very specific to me, and I'll tell you the exact reason why I wrote it. Some songs are open to your interpretation. And I'll just go, right, I'm just going to play the song, and I'll let you feel what you feel. But I say my music isn't really for live. It's for putting headphones on, lying in bed, turn the lights off, and having a good old cry. Cathartic cry. That's my style. I'm not a sad person, but I'm not a sad person because I let it all out in my music. And so when I'm not singing, I'm just generally quite happy, just smiling all the time. But yeah, that's my style. My style is that strange kind of. There's breakup songs, there's songs about mental health being all right, not being all right. Yeah, it's kind of, singer-songwritery, young boy making his way through life.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're still very young. Do you know what I mean? So there's
Yeah,
still, you're still
still figuring out.
learning. You're still learning.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
And it's
there's
still changing as well. Every song I kind of with especially on the piano, because my dad taught me to play the guitar and I kind of taught myself to play the piano. So with every song I write, I feel I get better on the piano. And the better you get on the piano, the more you write with it because you figure out how to do different chords and stuff. So I think it's always changing because the better I get, the more styles I find, the more chords I find, and you get jazzier with chords. But when you rent 105 songs, you don't want to do the same four chords in a row. So you try and find new stuff. So it is always changing, but it always keeps that roots of a cathartic experience, I think, is really important. I think that's what music is for. It's
Yeah,
to take
definitely.
you away from the what life throws at you and let you. That's kind of what I get it. I get cathartic feelings writing it and performing it, and I hope that people feel a similar way when they listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, what is your songwriting process? You talk about playing piano and stuff there. Do you write notes on in a notebook or whatever first, and then sort of work music around it? or do you have a tune in your head, or tune in your head first and then try and put words to it, or what way do you work?
For me, it's a strength. I don't, my dad, when I say my dad taught me to write a song, he taught me to write creatively rather than notes on a page, which is actually how he writes. He writes, he's got a notebook where he writes down lyrics and then he, because he's writing musicals, so he's got to like orchestrate the thing. So he has, you know, Sibelius open, which is the essentially writing notes on a computer. Yeah. And then he's got Logic, which is your recording the stuff and synths and all that stuff. For me, I sit down at a piano and I try and write both at the same time, which is why they're quite cathartic, because if you said, right, you've got an hour from 2 o'clock till 3 o'clock to write me a song, I probably wouldn't be able to come up with it. But if you gave me a week, I'd be able to come up with 10, because they come out when they come out. Some take 5 minutes, some take 5 months. But it's just a strange thing of like sitting down. And if it's about myself, I have to be feeling it in the moment. Otherwise, it's just like I can't figure out how, I can't pretend to feel it. But sometimes I write songs about other people, so I can't feel it because it's about other people. I find them easier because, you know, they've described how they feel or what they went through. And then I can put myself in their headspace, which is why a lot of my songs are like first person, because I almost I almost put my acting brain on, put myself there and pretend to be the person, whether it's myself 5 years ago or them, another person I'm talking about. It's quite artsy rather than logical. I want to say that sometimes I know what I'm writing about.
Yeah.
And sometimes I sit at the piano and go, what's the first thing that pops into my head? Because the Beatles always, I think it was the Beatles, always said that green eggs and ham was it Yesterday or one of the really famous Beatles songs. They didn't have the lyrics, so they just sang green eggs and ham to the tune. Yesterday, but one of them. I don't think I could do that. I'd throw the tune away because I would hear green eggs and ham and it would ruin it for me. So everything's got to be in place because I'm so like right with my feelings rather than with my musical knowledge. My musical knowledge comes into it when I go, right, okay, I've got a tune and I've got some lyrics. Now, do we change the key or do we, what do we do? You know what I mean? That's where like the stuff my dad taught me of like, I think a really important thing I learned was if you have a song where the melody starts on the same beat of the bar every line, people will stop listening by the second verse because it's boring. That's my one rule. If you ever write a song, try and mix up where the line begins. And the best example my dad used to teach me was Losing My Religion by REM. Every single line starts on a different beat of a bar, which means if you don't know the song and you're given the lyrics and you're like, could you give this a go at singing it? You'd have no idea. It changes every single line. That's and it's crazy. Brilliant. It's amazing. Give it a listen. And you'll see that I wish I could show you, but obviously we're on radio, but put four fingers up and tap each finger on the beat of the bar and you'll see that it will start on a different, it's brilliant. But that's my strange process where I sit down at piano and feel my way through it, a feeling of something, put my musicality brain on and go, right, where do we take the middle eight or where do we take? Yeah, it's a strange, this feeling based. But that's where my acting and singer-songwriting crosses over.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, you're obviously very influenced by your dad. Yes. I mean, who else would be your musical influences? Who would you kind of have on a pedestal musically?
I mean, I grew up, there are the people I put on a pedestal and there are the people I grew up listening to. So I grew up listening to Ed Sheeran. Mm-hmm. So of course I'm influenced by him subconsciously because that's who I listen to. It's who I was a big fan of. I remember my dad took me to a concert of his at Wembley. But the people I put on a pedestal and that my dad put on a pedestal, which was very important for me growing up, were Damien Rice on Cyrano.
Yeah.
I worked with Glenn Hansard.
Yes.
Who is best friends with Damien Rice and said to me, oh, I think my friend Damien's going to come out and join us. And I went, you're not talking about Damien Rice, are you? And he goes, oh, yeah. And I went, if that happens, I would die. I would actually die. I actually wouldn't be able to come out with you because I'm really good at, like, I don't get flustered by people who are famous.
Yeah.
I'm quite good at just interacting with them because we do the same thing for a living most of the time. You most famous people you think of are actors, and I go, well, we do the same thing for a living, and if we interact on a work basis and I'm strange, no one's going to want to work with me again. So I just train myself to forget who they are and go, no, you're just another actor on set. But Damien Rice, I would really struggle to, because my dad introduced me to Damien Rice through Cannonball, the song, and it was purely to teach me to write a song. And then he said, you're not allowed to listen to the rest of his album because you're not ready for it. I was 14, like, okay, fine. And then when I was 16 and I'd written a couple of songs, I really specifically remember how I was. We were cooking dinner for my mum, who was like, she was coming in from work or something. And he said, I think you're ready for Damien Rice. We're going to listen to the album. And I sat on a chair while he was cooking. And he said, you could help me with dinner or you could sit on this chair, close your eyes and listen to the greatest album of all time. And we sat and listened to Damien Rice. So he's properly, when you say pedestal, he is like the top of the top.
Wow.
But yeah, as I say, Ed Sheeran and Passenger, I was always a big fan of. I think there's a big influence from Passenger into my music because of his storytelling. Puts story above melody and chords. A lot of his songs are quite similar in their focus style and their chord progressions. Now, he's very clever, but they are all quite similar, but the story he tells in each song is different, and you are taken on a journey with him. And he creates a character that you empathize. It's almost like a film. He creates a character you empathize with. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that I carry into my music. There's Ed Sheeran, who I grew up subconsciously loving and then subconsciously having in my music, Passenger, who I take great inspiration from, and then Damien Rice, who I put on an absolute pedestal and would die if I met him.
Yeah, because I mean, was at the Irish premiere of Serrano, and it was just like Glenn came on the screen, and just the whole audience went, oh,
yeah,
you know, because he's so revered here.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of nice. He's such a little legend.
He's so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, do you have a preference, obviously, with the acting with Serrano? So do you have a preference between the acting and singing? Obviously, you can do both. But do you have a favourite? Or is it just nice to do a bit of everything?
I'm a grass is always greener kind of a person. I think I chose to do acting because I couldn't ever settle into a life where my Monday is the same as my Tuesday.
Yeah.
So when I'm acting in theatre, I always think, God, I could do some film and telly now. And as soon as I'm doing film and telly, and people who have worked in film and telly know, I'd say 90% of it is sitting in your trailer waiting to be used.
Yeah.
Which is lovely until it's like 6 months of that. And then you're like, I could do with just being used now. So you go, oh, I'd love to do some theatre, or I'd love to get on a stage and do some singer-songwriting. It's nice to do both. I think acting is it's a strange thing to say, but this is the truth. Acting is my day job. Yeah. Which I'm so lucky and blessed to be able to say. And singer-songwriting is my passion project. Like, I couldn't pay my bills with the money I earn from singer-songwriting, which actually, for me, makes it something I enjoy doing more because it's not to pay bills. I don't do it to pay bills. I do it because I love it. Whereas sometimes, and that is the case with acting, I do it because I love it. But when you're being paid a lot of money, suddenly becomes a thing of like, this is to pay my bills.
Yeah.
So maybe I shouldn't be enjoying this because they're paying me so I should be working hard all the time. And then eventually you go, no, I've actually worked hard enough. There's actually no more work I can do. I do just need to sit in my trailer and wait. It's just, I think I prefer acting in the sense of I'm better at it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I have been doing it longer. I am further along in my career.
Yeah.
But that isn't to say that I'm going to work harder at acting because I love it. It almost makes me work harder at singer-songwriting because I want to get to the point in my music career that I'm at in my acting career.
Mm, yeah. As I said, you're still a baby. Do you know what I mean?
I'm still a baby. It goes in waves. It comes and goes in waves. Still figuring out who I am. Exactly. I might not do any of this by the time I'm 25. I might be like, no, I just... I like board games and like card games and things. I might just do that for a living when I'm 25. You know what I mean? I might continue acting and singing lark and just work in a cafe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like Superman. Do you know what I mean? It's glasses off during the day and glasses off during the day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's opposite of Superman, yeah. I put my glasses on to work.
So, I mean, that brings us very, very nicely onto Serrano. I mean, what an incredible movie. I mean, it's just...
I love it.
People are just... I've seen it twice now. And it's it's just incredible. Your scene in particular, everyone is talking about that particular song. I don't know, it's struck a chord with a lot of people. Everyone's saying it's the best film, it's the best song in the movie.
Thank you very much. Well, I got tagged on a tweet today. Someone did a cover of it. They obviously tagged the writers and all three of the boys. He said the words, "Thank you for bringing this beautiful song into the world." And I was like, "Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, world. You're welcome."
Yeah, how did you get involved in the film initially? Was it just a phone call one day?
It was an audition. So Joe Wright, the director, had a vision for this scene, and he envisioned Glenn Hansard. Mm-hmm. So he gave him a call, because obviously I chatted to the boys and I asked the exact same question you just asked me. So I got the, and then he also knew Sam Amadon, and they're both, I mean, I think the word folk is fair to describe Glenn. Glenn doesn't have a genre. Glenn is Glenn. Glenn is, his genre is Glenn Hansard. But so two very famous kind of folk musicians. We're going to use the word folk. And then he said to Glenn, do you know any young, I need like a young man. I need a guy younger than the two of you who can, like a singer or a singer-songwriter, someone who can put across a story, but their strength is singing. And he said, my neighbor sings and plays guitar. And Joe was like, well, I don't think you're quite understanding me, Glenn. I don't just mean some kid, you know, plays who can sing. I mean, like someone who does this for a living. And he was like, no, okay, or let me give it some thought. And then at the same time, they went to a casting director in London. So they put a call out, and I got an email, but I was crossing over agents at the time, which made it complicated because some emails come into my old agent, some come into my new, and it went into my old agent who sent me an email saying, oh, two tapes have come in for you, two auditions. I'll send them over now. And I got one in, and then I assumed I didn't get the second, and I assumed maybe it had fallen through.
Yeah.
And then my old agent got an email from the casting director saying, is Scott going to do this bloody tape or not? Because he said he is. And she kind of went, she passed that on. And I said, what tape? Like, what are you talking about? She goes, oh, sorry. I didn't send it on. So I was 5 days late. And then I said, stupidly, I said, oh, I'll get it to you today. Realizing actually I've got no time. So I had a haircut because I looked an idiot. Like I was, it was mid lockdown. I'm like ugly and like wearing tracksuits. So I got a haircut.
Yeah.
I picked up my guitar and I sang a song that I've written. It took me the length of the song to record, edit and send off. And they came back in like 2 days and said, you're great. They said, oh, it's between you and someone else. And then it took them 3 weeks to decide. And when they decided, it was so close to flying off to Italy. It was almost like, get your passport and come to Italy tomorrow. It was like pretty like,
oh my God,
we've got the read through next week. So I packed my bag and they flew me out to Italy. We did a read through. I met the two boys.
Yeah.
Talking about Glenn Hansard like he's one of the boys. I did have a bit of a, because I met Sam first, who said, oh, you'll meet Glenn later, he's lovely. And I was like, Glenn, there can't be many Glenn. Like, and I said, it's not Glenn Hansard, is it? And he goes, oh yeah, do you know him? I said, I haven't met him. I kind of played off like, oh yeah, I know of him, going like I sung once in drama school, you know what I mean? Like I grew up singing his songs. So it was, he was such a beautiful man. And so was Sam. And it was such a lovely experience with the three of us, because we were deep lockdown in Italy, the three musketeers, just like exploring these strange forgotten lands. And it was amazing. It did like felt like the forgotten lands, because no one was out. These beautiful streets, but no one was walking them because of lockdown.
Yeah.
So we were walking through the set of like, I don't know, like Game of Thrones or something, but no one was really like destitute. We had a wonderful read through. I met the entire cast. And the only reason I'm saying this is because it was really strange that we were there, because we were not cast members. Like if you've seen the call sheet or anything, or even the credits, we're guards one, two and three. And we don't have a name, but we read through. Like they had all of the leads and then the three boys in the corner who came to sing a song. But the only reason we were there is because Joe Wright absolutely loved this song in this moment, and it was really important to him. And he brought, you know, he brought in the big guns. He brought in his friend Glenn and Sam and this young boy from London who nobody knew. And it was a wonderful experience up on this mountain singing a song that I, you know, I brought, I just sent in a video of me singing, and they said, yeah, that's great. Let's go to Italy and film a, and make a big Hollywood film where you sing on a mountain and freeze your... So cold.
You're out on the battlefield as well, aren't you? You're in there.
Oh, yeah, we did a bit of that. Yeah, I think Joe was casting a... I think he was very pleased when he cast me, which is a big compliment and I really appreciate it. But he was casting a singer. That's what he needed.
Yeah.
And he just happened to also cast an actor that he was very, like, pleasantly surprised by and put me in more of the film than he originally planned because I was actually an actor. And he was expecting that. He was just expecting to get a singer. But I just, as you say, I happened to do both in my life. So he gave me the bits at the end. I won't spoil it, what happens to me, but, you know, he gave me those bits at the end on the battlefield, with the guns. And actually there's a cut scene that I did with Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm in that bell. I ring that bell.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually have a scene.
As in the song, yeah.
Well, I actually have a scene in that bell before the song, which was cut in the end, which I totally understand, because that sequence is very long.
It's
the perfect length in the film, but it would have been quite long had we done this 2-minute scene.
Yeah,
that just like Peter giving me an apple, I think. it was great though. I'm going to try and get the footage from him to put on my showreel.
Oh man, I mean, it must have been amazing, even, you know, having Peter. You know, Peter in the lead role. I mean, he must have been just amazing to work with. You know?
He's a proper gorgeous human being. Like he's like so full of life. He's that kind of the way he carries himself on TV in interviews and things is not the way. Like, yeah, it is the way he is, and he's totally deadpan humor.
Yeah,
but what it is like on TV, he's there to. Like I've seen him do the interviews for Cyrano and stuff. He's there advertising Cyrano, and he's very good. Getting like he very good at talking to people where they're trying to interview him about his life, and he's making sure it always comes back to Cyrano. And I can see that, and he's very good at doing these interview stuff. But when we're on the set and it's like we're there for hours, he's so good at making sure everybody's having a good time.
Oh, wow.
And he doesn't have to do that. You know what I mean? He's Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
But he's in the middle of the set. He's not, you know, I'm not saying he's like clowning about, but he's making sure. He was really good at actually making, on a really personal level, and I'm sure he did it to everyone.
It makes you
feel like just doing it to you. But he really made me feel important, which you can get very drowned out on film sets because there's so many people there doing their jobs. He really made me feel like I was there doing a really important role for this film. And actually everybody did that. And as you say, I think that was to do with this very, very small moment being so big. Joe did it. He was brilliant at it. And he was such an incredible director in that moment, especially, but all the way across there. You know, we were there for, I'm going to say 2 to 3 months film that 2.5 minute, 3 minute song. So we really felt like we were valued the whole time, even though some of it was like sat in a hotel room. It was like, you know, just come and visit us on set, come and walk about. We almost had like this free rein pass to go anywhere we liked because, you know, Joe was so happy that we were there. It was wonderful, but Peter especially was someone who, but the thing about him also, he was so funny and so charismatic. And then when the cameras were rolling, he was like, I'm a professional, I'm here to do my work. And it was so amazing to watch because he would be like, action, and then straight into Serrano. And you're like, wow. Because I need, you know, 2 minutes to be like, don't talk to me for a minute. And now let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still young. I'm still perfecting that craft, but he's been doing it for years and he can literally go from sticking his tongue out at you to a really serious crying scene with Serrano. And you're like, wow, that is because you see that on film and it's amazing. He's an Oscar worthy actor.
Oh, man. Literally, I saw it. I was like, oh, my God, Peter's going to get nominated for an Oscar for this performance.
I was so surprised, I must say, because he is. So gorgeous in it.
Incredible. Just, you know, just totally believable.
And going from, and totally believable across years as well, you know. It goes from being young, not young, but a younger man to being slightly older near the end of the film, and it's like gorgeous.
I don't know. And he seemed to age a lot in that last 3 years, didn't he? Yeah. He was like an old man at the very end.
Yeah, a little blood water. But he's incredible. But to see it in real life in front of your own eyes was. Do you know? I felt like it was a gift that I'd been given.
Definitely. Oh my goodness! As I said, everyone is talking about. Literally, everyone is talking about this song, and I've listened to it to death. Basically, it's on my Spotify favorites, and even the instrumental of the track is just
gorgeous. Oh, gorgeous. Yeah. The National are really amazing.
So I mean, how far in advance were you given the song? How far before you filmed it? How long before?
I was cast about a week before, so it was quite quick. They gave it to me and I listened to it, and they gave me the music because I said, well, I'm a musician, so I'd love the music. Mm. But actually when we got there, they just went, because it's Glenn and Sam, that nobody's directing them. You know, I mean, if they do something, you say, that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for your presence. So they just went, do you want to just give it a sing? And I've got the original recording. I said, do you mind if I record it? Because, you know, then I can go back to it and listen to it. And you know, I got everyone's permission and that. And I've got the original recording and it's amazing. Like, they don't read music. They've got the music in front of them purely because that's the only lyrics we had.
Yeah.
But they're not reading it. They've listened to it 4 or 5 times and they go, yeah, I've got an idea of it. I'll give you my take on it. And that's why they were brought in, because they weren't, you know, they weren't, we had a ghost track. It was, I think it was Aaron singing it and of the National.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm recreating it because that's what I do. I'm a recreator. I'm an actor. That's almost what we do for a living. Recreate this and put it on film, pick up the text and speak it. Whereas they're not, they're musicians. So they went, I'm going to give you my take. I've listened to that. I know the tune. I'm going to give you my take.
Yeah.
And it was incredible to be around. And obviously I'm an actor. So I was like, there's a musical director in here. I'm going to follow the notes exactly how they're written on the page. And then learn over weeks that that's not what they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, for this, they wanted musicians. There are times when they want me to be an actor and there are times when they want me to be a musician. And for this, you know, when I was on the screen and I'll probably talk about this with Joe, like about Joe, that was acting. That was, I put my acting brain on. Joe was sat 2 meters away from me. Like, and we were like, right, let's get this right. Cause he said to me, I really want this to be the important moment in the song because I've got issues about my dad.
Yeah.
And you know, and when you sing this, it makes me cry. And I did one take and he was sat 2 meters away from me weeping.
Oh my God.
Well, I started crying. Cause when you sit next to someone crying, you start crying.
Yeah.
And that, I think that was the take we used for at least half of it, because I know it cuts away at one point to a close.
I mean, your haircut was very unforgiving, wasn't it? In that.
Oh yes, yeah. There was nothing to hide behind. Yeah, couldn't sweep that across my eyes or anything. Yeah, Joe said to me when it was part of the. In fact, it was part of the audition. He said, "Would you be happy to shave your head?" And obviously, I'm 22-year-old actor. You just say yes.
Yeah.
That's the rule. You just say. And then when I got there for the read through, we were only there a week. Glenn, Sam, and I, only there for a week. And we did the read through, and then they flew us home and flew us back. And they shaved my head in that week. And then I went home for a month and a half. And so they shaved my head. And then Joe came to visit us in hair and makeup and looked at me and went, "Why'd you do that?" I went, don't do that. You asked me to shave my head. And he goes, yeah, I want you to shave your head for film, but we're not filming for a month and a half. You didn't have to do it now. I was like, they just asked me to and I said yes. Yeah, but it's just because you're 22, you're on a big film set and you're just thankful to be there. You just say yes. I didn't mind it. I've got a music video on my YouTube channel because I planned to do a music video when I was home and I've got a shaved head because they shaved my head during that week off. Sent me home. And then when I got back, you know, they had to shave my head again because it had grown out. So actually there was no point in shaving it in the first place. Because Sam and Glenn's absolutely not, you're not shaving my head. But he did the opposite. He grew his hair out really long and grew his beard. So he kind of looked as kind of unkept as us because he
had like a little hat on as well, didn't he? I think.
Yeah, exactly. I have a hat on in the first scene I filmed. I had a hat on and I was going, am I going to have a hat on for this whole film? And you just shaved my head for no reason. It was very funny. But Joe was like, no. When we do the close-up for your song, you're absolutely not wearing a hat. And I was like, okay, good.
No, it's better without the hat. I think it was more of a, you know.
Yeah. Oh,
it definitely looked better.
Well, I mean, it's funny, strangely, it made me look even younger, which was kind of the point.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Glenn...
Young boy going to war.
...sang a moment about he's lived his whole life and he's ready for this. Sam sang a moment of, like, I've lived some of my life and I've got regrets. And then I've got, like, I've been here, like, 15 years and, you know, I've done the thing. It's quite beautiful and sad. Yeah. And then that sad moment in the middle where, you know, I'm almost replaced by someone even younger, which is, it's a beautiful
thing.
And I don't talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always intrigued as to whether, so when you're sitting in this bunker, let's call it, I mean, are you hearing, are you singing live? I'm always intrigued by watching musicals, whether what we're seeing is you actually singing or whether it's like overdubbed or, how does it work?
Well, there's two ways of doing it. Well, there's three ways. What we did two of them as a backup, because the thing is with Mount Etna is it's an active volcano and it exploded while we were on it. Actually hilariously it exploded while we were on it, ash fell everywhere, and then it exploded as we were leaving, and it wasn't like a mini explosion like when we were on it, it was a big one that lava engulfed where we were filming. So they and I at the premiere chatted to some producers. They said only last week did they get the final bit of equipment off the mountain. We filmed this last Christmas. I don't mean 2 months ago. I mean a year and 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Because they had to dig it out. They had to dig out the equipment that they left there. Because they just had to leave. Otherwise, they would have died.
Oh.
So what that means is there was no room for mistakes.
Yeah.
So when we were there on the read-through week, we recorded the whole song in the studio, little makeshift studio they'd made up, as a just in case.
Okay.
And I think we did some backing because we were also singers and a lot of the people in this film are actors by trade. So they said, well, you're here. This is what you do for a living. You record songs in studios. Will you do some backing vocals for a lot of the other songs? Mm. So like things that Kelvin is in and like where there's random ghost vocals, like backing vocals, not over his singing, but backing vocals and harmonies and things.
Yeah.
That's mostly Glenn, Sam and I, which is really lovely. And we obviously recorded our song, but I am 100% sure, and I think I asked actually at the premiere that when we got on the mountain we had little microphones on and earpieces in, and we recorded the live vocals on the set, and then of course the third version is Les Mis, which is where they have a full live orchestra behind the camera and they sing along with that. Oh, we didn't do that. We didn't have the space for that, as you say, in this little but it
so was the music in your was the music was in your ear
in my ear yeah I had the world's smallest earpiece completely hidden from view that I had many issues with.
The magic of musicals, you know, you see all these things and you're kind of, are they just sing, and you know, where does the music come from? And
I even think that I had my own voice in my ear. And I was singing, but it was so that just in case they used a bit of the studio, it matched up. So you're kind of mouthing along to your own voice, but also giving a full singing performance just in case they use the live vocal, and which they did. So I'm glad I did full. It's a strange, you're thinking about loads and loads of things while Joe Wright is 2 meters away from you crying. yes, the acting comes first. The acting.
So, I mean, it must have been an amazing learning experience being on a project. Of this size. I mean, you must have learned so much.
Yeah, well, as I said, with Peter, that ability to go from making sure everyone's having a good time and although this is our job, this is also what we do because we love it, so we're going to make sure we have a good time, going straight into I Am Cyrano. Like, that incredible ability to switch instantly and give an Oscar-worthy performance. So I learned, you know, and learned from the best. And then Glenn taught me lots of lessons actually about life, where things like, I've obviously been working since I was 12, but I've had really good money habits put into me by my parents. My mum does bookkeeping for a living, so you can imagine I think about money a lot. And I'm not saying I grew up without money, but I didn't grow up incredibly rich. I was acting when I was a kid, I wasn't earning millions. I was maybe earning 1,000, and I would see that as, you know, when you're 15, that's £1 million. Like that is unlimited money. And it could have been very easy for me to spend it. And I just thought, you know, I want to buy a flat one day, and it's my dream, and I'm just going to keep all of this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've always had, but actually that developed a bit into a fear of spending money. And Glenn was very good at going, we were in Italy and it was coming up to Christmas and I was trying to buy gifts for family. There was like a really nice, I think it was a cashmere jumper or something. I was, you know, it's for my mum. So I was like, I'm going to spend some money. And I was like, oh, this is so expensive. This is really, and Glenn was like, Scott, you've got to stop right now. You are buying a gift for your mum and you are doing it like, oh, okay, here's the money. You've got to do it with love, man. You've got to go, I want to spend this and I want to spend it on my mum and I want to feel good about that. You don't want to spend whatever it was, £100 and on your mum and feel like you're like, oh, I don't want to spend this. Like, he taught me really good lessons about life. Like, that's just one of the small ones I remember. Just that thing of spending money with love, and not even just money, just like going about life with love and giving with love rather than being a giving person, but inside feeling bad about it. Be a giving person and feel good about it. Give and give with love. Give out to the universe. Because he said to me, it always gives back when you give with love.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You always get something back. Whether it's, you know, obviously he was giving me the example on money. He was like, it won't necessarily be money that comes back to you. You won't spend money and then get money back. But it will be, you'll get something from the universe that is worth that in your life. Not worth that much. Necessarily, but worth that. He changed my life actually, hanging out with Glenn.
No, Glenn's amazing. He busks here at Christmas, you know, for the homeless charities and all this kind of stuff. He's an amazing guy.
Amazing. He busked. So he was in Notto, which is where we were, and he got there a day earlier than us. And he said, even though he's Glenn Hansard, he felt very lost in this city. He didn't know what to do. He couldn't speak the language. And he said, you know what? I'm going to do what makes me comfortable. He grabbed his guitar, he opened his case, and he started playing. And he said he made like €180 that day. He went and spent it on a big dinner with, you know, bought dinner for someone he'd met on the set or something like that. He said that, you know, that's just what makes me comfortable. That's what it made me feel one with the city. And now I feel comfortable here. And I'm going to take you to a coffee place I found that came out and gave me a coffee while I was playing and things like that. You know what I mean? That's, he built a community in a day.
Yeah.
By just standing and singing and playing guitar. And that was another thing I learned from him, that confidence to just, like, I always felt with busking, sometimes I'm like, people don't want you there. But he was like, if they don't, they'll tell you. Assume they do. Don't assume they don't, because you won't, you'll feel bad about it. You're giving to this place by playing your music and you're feeling bad about it because you're assuming that nobody wants to hear it. If they don't want to, they'll walk away. If they do, they'll sit around, they'll enjoy their coffee and they'll have an amazing time. And I was like, you know, in my head, I was like, it's easy to say when you're Glenn Hansard, thankful that you're in their city. But he was, you know, he was really, again, another person who was really good at making me feel like I wasn't a young kid that they brought in and given like I'd won the lottery. You know what I mean? It was like, you're providing, like they're thankful that you're here. And as I said, Peter was really good at that. Joe was really good at that. And Glenn, who I spent most of my time with, was best at that. He was so good at making me feel, because he, again, the humblest man I've ever met, constantly going, God, I'm so jealous of you with so many things like, he would be like, I wish I could act like you. And I was like, Glenn, you starred in Once, like, he was like, yeah, I'm not an actor, that's, they just, you know. And he told me the story of how that came about, and it was, and he was really good at making me feel like he'd won the lottery to meet me. Even though it felt like the other way around to me, which is, you know, and that does make it very easy. And that's the thing on Glenn, I suppose, make it very easy to lose that starstruckness of hanging out with him.
Yeah. And it's good to make those connections as well, isn't it? It's not a bad thing having Glenn Hansard as a friend, you know?
No. Well, especially on he's just a gorgeous human being that texts me every now and then. and just says like I think he got you know, sadly got the coronavirus while he was in Italy.
Yeah.
And we had we obviously would get these, we would do tests every day because it was mid lockdown while we were filming this.
Yeah.
Every day we were doing a PCR and we would get a text that said negativo because it was Italian. And so we would be going around dancing on the streets of Noto going negativo, negativo. And he texted us the other week and he just said positivo, boys.
Positivo. Oh no.
It was brilliant. But just like that little thing of taking you back there instantly. It was gorgeous. It was a lovely little warm feeling in my tummy.
Yeah. I mean, you've got the Irish connection, obviously, through your dad. Have you've still got family over?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All of my dad's side are in Galway. Yeah. They're lovely. Love them. I don't go over enough. Obviously haven't been over for 2 years, but I've had a partner of 3 years now, almost 3 years. I've known her 3 years. We didn't get together straight away. Now, and she has never met them, which means I haven't been over for at least 3 years, which is not, she loves Galway. She's also an actress and she went on a tour there. So I've promised to take her to meet my family soon. So I love Galway. I love Ireland. I've got a massive connection to it. I get a lot of auditions in for Irish because I've put on my CV that I've got a native Irish accent.
Right, now
that is untrue. but if I go there, I come back speaking a little, my rhotic R comes in.
I'm,
you know,
sure
what I mean?
You could acquire one. You know, if you came over here for a few days, I'd say you'd acquire one.
Yeah. And if you're doing a big film, you don't mind flying over to see your family for a couple of days.
Exactly. Tie the two together.
Yeah.
I mean, are there any other projects you're working on at the moment? Are you focusing on music or any films or anything coming up?
I am focusing on music. Somebody came and saw Cyrano. And I mean, this is one of those things. My agent texted me this. And I said to her, I always thought that was a myth where people would see films and go, oh my God, you'd be perfect for this. So apparently someone has seen Cyrano and contacted my agent, said, oh my God, I'm doing this film and we'd love to see Scott for it. And because we saw him in Cyrano. And I was like, surely that's a myth. Like, surely that doesn't matter. Yeah. So it's, you know, there's lots of, as I say, though, you know, that might not happen, but there's lots of things that are potential. The film itself and people loving that little moment has been really lovely. And has benefited me in the sense that it's something that I can point people towards and be like, look, I don't just say I can do this. I you know, I've got show reels and videos of me doing it. You think it's good, then great. You don't have to kind of hope and pray that I can do it. You can see whether I can do it or not here, which is always very useful as a young actor. I'm also focusing on life.
Yeah.
I just bought a flat with my partner.
Nice.
Which incredible. So we've moved in together, which is really lovely. So just life things and taking a big break, because strangely a lot of people for lockdown was really, they didn't do a lot and they're coming out and wanting to do a lot. Result of Cyrano, and then Joe Wright gave me a call a couple of months later and asked me to do a short film for him.
Wow.
And then I did a West End production towards the in that summer where things opened up a little bit. I've actually been really almost busier during the lockdown, which I've been so grateful for. And again, I'm very aware it was a one in a million. You know, there were two jobs going and I happened to get one of them.
Yeah.
It was a proper blessing. And
that was obviously fated. Do you know what I mean? You got that, you got that job for a reason, you know, purely.
Yeah. Well,
your talent, you know?
Thank you. But I just feel like I want to concentrate on life because a lot of people got a lot of lifetime during the lockdown and a bit done with life and they're ready to get back to work. And I'm quite the opposite. I did a lot of work and I'm quite ready to get back to life.
Yeah. I remember like Nativity was a huge little film series, wasn't it? I mean, these school kids, some of these very quite naughty school kids, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I'll have to rewatch it now to keep an eye out for you.
Yeah. It's a very strange film. I love it. It's a kids film. It's brilliant at what it is. It's a film for kids at Christmas.
Yeah.
But I get a text every single Christmas from friends.
You're on the telly.
It starts in October because some strange people start watching Christmas films in October.
Yeah.
They go, oh, I just watched you on my telly. And I go, I always text back the first person. I go, it started then. Has it? Because it's on Netflix, but I think it's only on Netflix around Christmas time.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it must be nice. Yeah. You're literally a jack of all trades. Do you know what I mean? That you can do stage work, film work, you're singing, songwriting.
Advert. I like an advert.
Bit of an advert, yeah. You know,
I like an advert. It's a different type of acting. It's like a, you know, at the same time as you're acting, you're also advertising a product. It's very strange, but I like it. Yeah, as you say, I like to spread myself about, and that's because what I do for a living is fun. And yeah. if it ever feels stale, then I won't want to do it anymore. So I make sure that if I keep changing what I'm doing, I keep spreading myself out and learning as much as I can, and learning new skills to do different things, then it will never get stale, and I'll love it for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. Do you know what I mean? You've got so many strings to your bow now. That you could, you know, you could wake up tomorrow and think, oh, I'd like to do a bit more film, or, you know, I'd like to do some TV or whatever. You've got all these different strings.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't really know what you're going to be doing from one day to the next.
No. Yeah, it's very true. And I love that. My girlfriend hates that. My girlfriend likes a bit of, she's an actress. But
I keep
telling her she's insane to come into this industry with this, but she likes a bit of structure. She likes a bit of normality. I'm like, no, give me 3 months in Prague and then 3 months in Barcelona and then a week trip to Dublin where you go through Canada. Like, give me that.
I'm not here. Yeah.
Like, just in hotels and.
Yeah. I mean, I can't have been the only person that watched Cyrano and went, oh my God, I need to find out who this guy is. I literally watched that scene and I was on my phone straight after. Who's this guy? Who's the guy in the bunker? You know, I knew, obviously, like Sam, I knew I've played Sam on my radio show so many times. And obviously, Glenn's so well known over here.
Yeah.
I was like, who is this? Who is this guy? You know, and I can't be the only person that's done.
I think strangely it played in my favor that they were so famous, because you don't go ahead and Google who they are. So you're only Googling who I am. You know what I mean? Which is nice. It plays in my favor that instead of going, who are the three boys in the bunker?
Yeah,
they're only Googling who's the third one.
Who was the young boy in the bunker?
Yeah. So yeah, I think it plays to. I've got the, and I think someone said it to me recently. The third verse, it has that sense of mystery, because for the first one you're watching Glenn Hanson do it and you go, oh, it's Glenn Hanson, oh, he's brilliant, oh, gorgeous, what a gorgeous song, and then Sam Amandon does it and he's got this wonderful, wonderfully unique voice, and you're like, oh, God, yes. That's amazing. And then this boy comes on with a shaved head and you're like, who's this then? Who's that? You know what I mean? Thinking about his dad. And I love it. I had such a good time.
Oh, there's going to be a lot more traffic to your YouTube videos and stuff as well. You know, people are going to be watching Nativity after hearing this interview.
Oh, good. Oh, I hope they do.
Checking you out, seeing what you were like as a nine-year-old.
Yes. Oh, great.
But thanks so much for talking to me today, Scott. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.